Hello, this is Karen Wright, and today we will be mapping mold management on the 15-minute matrix.
Welcome to the 15-minute matrix. I'm Andrea Nakayama, functional medicine nutritionist and your host. This is the podcast that brings you bite-sized insights and lessons on how to use the most important tool in functional medicine and functional nutrition. Today on the 15-Minute Matrix, I'll be talking with Karen Wright. Karen is a licensed nutritionist in New York State and trained as a functional nutritionist. She's passionate about helping people transform their health using food, movement, and by detoxifying their living environment. Karen earned a Master's of Science degree in Human Nutrition and Functional Medicine and a Doctor of Traditional Naturopathy. She is the author of the book, Is It Mold? A Holistic Approach to Managing a Commonly Overlooked Condition, and a contributing author to the book, Visionaries with Guts. And today we're going to take this conversation about mold a step further as we look at how to manage toxic mold exposure. Hello, Karen. Thank you so much for joining us on the 15-Minute Matrix.
Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled to have you here. You're part of our inner circle here at the Functional Nutrition Lab, and you have an expertise that I really want to highlight. Karen, in episode 27 of the podcast, I interviewed Dr. Jill Carnahan, and we discussed toxic mold, but this is an issue that is becoming more prevalent in our populations of chronically ill patients. It's an area where you've really focused a lot of your time and clinical care. Can you just start us off with talking about why we might be seeing this increase in exposure?
There's a lot of factors. There's the environmental, where we're seeing more rainstorms. But there's also a big component that people don't, is the way the buildings are built nowadays are very different than prior buildings. Part of it is that the exchange of air going in and out of the building no longer exists. Our buildings are airtight, and that happened in the 70s with the oil crisis. So we wanted to get the buildings airtight to prevent leakage. But what has happened is that we've now, being airtight, we've promoted growth of mold, which has always been a problem historically. It's mentioned in the Bible, so it's not a new thing, but we've escalated it. The other thing is with the HAV systems, which are systems that we have in office buildings and a lot of homes have them, which control the temperature. A lot of them were designed for equipment that was much less using electricity than we have today. And as the demand rises, because like computers generate heat, you need a bigger HAV system. If you don't, you're going to generate a lot of mold in the system itself.
So there's more environmental inputs that we're experiencing as we also have more compromised systems of immunity and detoxification. It's sort of a symbiosis, if you will.
And the other thing is certain modern things like carpets. I don't know if you remember, I remember there are pictures, you know, the people like beating, the servants beating carpets outside. Well, we have wall-to-wall carpets and you can't beat them. And if you ever vision these pictures of beating those carpets, a lot of dust came out. So all that dust, I don't care how much you vacuum or clean, is in there. And if you've ever pulled up a carpet, you'll see underneath, a lot of them have a layer of mold.
Interesting to think about all the things that are contributing to the problem. So what I really am excited to talk to you about, Karen, is how we manage mold. And you're speaking to some of the environmental factors, and I'm curious what you advise we do there, beat our carpets, not use front load washers. But what else if we're really focused on the skills arena of the matrix, if we're thinking about that right-hand side and we know mold is an issue, where do we spend our time there with patients and clients?
We can do the work to fix the home. We can do the work to fix the body. But the biggest area that I find the issue is the relationships and building the spirit. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you my own personal story. So here I am. I wrote this book on mold and gave it to my family, all has it. I have a cousin who has mold disease. My aunt's house is full of mold. She couldn't go in. And she was basically told that she was making it up. It's not in her head. It ended up everybody was against her. For over a year, she didn't visit my aunt and was ostracized. And I see this over and over again. And the sad thing is my aunt had my book. So she knew this was a problem. Now, if somebody who knows this is a problem is doing this and disbelief, there's so much of that. So people, and I've had client over client where people do not believe them. So when they say, you know, I can't come to your house, I can't do this because it affects my health, they're not believed. So that emotional, spiritual support is really important when we're dealing with mold.
How do you help people to cultivate that and communicate with their family members, with their friends, to help others understand that this is actually an issue?
First, they have to be okay with it themselves. And that's the thing I'm always worried, because if we're okay with it, then I can talk about it to other people. And then I say, you know, start giving them resources. So it's really helping the person feel comfortable speaking about what they have and being an advocate for themselves. And it's the same, you know, when we have the gluten, you know, people who have gluten issues, it's the same thing. You know, they've had to learn to speak up when they're going out in restaurants and stuff. So it's really learning to speak up and then getting that information so that people will start believing them.
It's really interesting to think about how we empower our patients and clients to speak up for themselves, as you're talking about, and to be able to articulate it in a way that's not defensive or that's not challenging people, but is speaking from their own perspective and what they need for themselves. How does this really interact if we go up the skill section? We're thinking about relationships. How is this whole stress response impacted by what an individual is going through around mold toxicity? I know Dr. Carnahan was talking about people having to leave their homes and buy all new equipment and leave everything behind. How do you work with people around that level of stress?
I've had people had to quit their jobs, and that's their only source of income. But so I do a lot of coaching with them, and it's really talking them through it. Like, what is getting them to understand what's more important? Is it your things or your health? Can you get new things? You can always get new things. You can always get the new job, but you can't get the new health.
Right.
And if you keep, and with mold, it's a spiral. So every time you get exposed, your health spirals downward, 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 downward. And so you eliminating as much as you can that's causing the problem is going to make a huge difference. So I have one client, young kid, mold. When he came to me, he couldn't work. His brain was a fog. We worked together, and he's now has a job he's holding down. So it's really getting the person, and here's another one. The family didn't believe him. And so when I explain to them and they can see that their health really affects everything else, and that's what has to be important. And we've kind of lost sight of that, you know, like things are important, but things we can replace. We can't replace ourselves.
Really good point. So when we're looking at the matrix in general, and again, just positioning ourselves over in the right-hand side, the skills section of the functional nutrition matrix, are there any other top-level tactics that you are employing in terms of exercise, movement, nutrition, hydration, sleep that make a difference for the individual that is dealing with toxic mold?
Yeah, so in terms of nutrition, I look for starting with a low amylase diet. And that is, I do it short term. I don't do anything drastic for long term. So that's eliminating a lot of the food with amylase. So most of your root vegetables come into that category. And that, for a couple of weeks, really seems to help get the person in a position where they can feel better. I am a big fan of probiotics, and I have seen, with the right probiotics, I have seen amazing turnarounds in health. So those are, for nutrition, my important things. Exercise is interesting. So a lot of mold, the breathing is difficult. And a lot of them start gaining weight also because they're holding on to toxins. And a lot of doctors are telling, you're not exercising. And are telling them to exercise. But if you over-exercise, like do aerobics, that can actually exasperate the situation. So for exercise, I really want something light, you know, yoga, not overexertion. So a light stretching, slow building up exercise, not trying to do the marathon weekend exercise. So it's really looking at light and stressful so you keep moving, but not overtaxing the body.
Right, because the body's already under so much stress. The bucket, so to speak, is full. Can you speak into the mechanisms a little bit of the low amylase diet and how you're thinking about probiotics and what's happening there as we introduce those tactics?
What I have seen, and I keep seeing over and over again with my mold population, is high glucose numbers. And I see it over and over, and I see when I get the mold under control that those numbers go down. So I'm looking so I'm looking at foods that are, you know, the vegetables that are not the high sugar is really what I'm going after. So, you know, I'm cutting out the grains. Bananas are like the only forbidden fruit, so to speak, because they are high sugar. The root vegetables, except for onions and garlic, they're high sugar. And, you know, that includes the carrots, the beets, you know, so they're high sugar foods. So we're cutting back on that. And number one, those feed bacteria, you know, bacteria love sugar.
Right.
So that is cutting that down. And usually by the time someone's getting to me, they've already cut out regular sugar. So it's getting food sugars out of their diet. And like I said, I have seen high glucose in this population, and they're not diabetic. The probiotics, I am a big fan of helping digestion as much as I can and changing the terrain. I find that with the people with mold, there's a lot of bad bacteria in there, so to speak, and I want to change that terrain. So the higher, the more dose of probiotics I can put in, the more that terrain changes so that they're better able to handle the onslaught. Now, that's not saying with something like mold, you're always going to be affected when you go, there's no like cure, but it's being able to handle so that when you go into a building, you're not like thrown off the rails. And I find that probiotics really help, and it's something you can do consistently every day for the rest of your life without, you know, affecting so many things.
You know, I think what's so interesting, Karen, is that a lot of practitioners don't understand the start low, go slow, find out what works for an individual. Probiotics are still often used in kind of a one-shot way. There's one prescription for everyone. And I'm imagining that you're dictating your probiotic dosage, your starting dosage, how quickly you increase based on the individual's needs and response.
Yeah, I'm always start, when it comes to probiotics, I always start slow. And, you know, people, the die-off reaction and the healing crisis, I don't like to cause a healing crisis. I find if I start slow, there's maybe a little bit of discomfort, but there's not like this overwhelm thing. And I can tell you, somebody came in the pharmacy, I recommended probiotics, I explained them how to do it, and they just were like in a rush, gung-ho. So what did they do? They took excess, much higher, And they end up with this huge inflamed rash on their body. They come out, it's like, yeah, you overdid it. Like, so starting slow. We got to this state slowly. Our body heals slowly. And when we do things in steps, I think we do much better. And to me, the analogy would be if we were on the 42nd floor, we wouldn't like walk out the window to get out to the ground. We'd go down the steps one at a time. So building up instead of starting all the way at the top is much better.
Oh, I love that analogy, Karen. My final question for you in managing mold is in relation to the many different modalities that you bring to the table. You're a functional practitioner. You're also an integrative practitioner. So you bring a lot of mind-body practices and also herbal practices to the table. Is there anything else that you would share with us that has become for you one of the key tips for helping patients to manage mold?
Herbally, it's milk thistle. So milk thistle, which is great for liver, is my go-to herbal preparation. I just really like it and find it works really well. And I also have people do a lot of journaling. Because when we're constant worry, we're not sleeping. So I want things to help a person like download. So before you go to bed, to be thinking about every single problem that is going on and, you know, will they find this? And am I going to survive? You know, like just download. So I have people write down everything. Because when we write it down, our mind thinks we're done with it for then. It's resolved subconsciously. So we can at least relax. So that is one. And then passion flower, speaking of that, with mold people who have mold or CRIS, chronic inflammation response, they study everything. These are my clients that come in with books of knowledge, which is a double-edged sword.
Right.
So they are constant worrying. So passion flower is the herb for that. And that I have them kept teas, even now this summer, you know, iced tea. So it's just that calm the mind down type herb. So those are my go-to herbs and the spirit
practices. I love it. Karen, thank you so much for the work you do and the myriad perspectives that you bring to the table so that more patients can manage their mold exposure.
Thank you.
The 15-Minute Matrix is brought to you by me, Andrea Nakayama, and the Functional Nutrition Alliance. The 15-Minute Matrix team includes my son, Gilbert Nakayama, on sound production, Renee Hunt, Natalie Merrill, and Christine Shook. You can visit us and hear more episodes at 15minutematrix.com. And please do let us know if you'd like to be notified each time there's a new podcast episode. You can go to 15minutematrix.com/notify to let us know you'd like to receive that email. You have an open invitation, speaking of emails, to email us. We want to know who you'd like to hear on the podcast and what you'd like to see mapped on the 15-Minute Matrix. You can email us at ask@15minutematrix.com.